You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's have some fun. On a Friday in Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, the weekend is finally here. Put a smile on your face. We are going to have fun tonight. We're all over the place, from the Paris Olympics to the Biden free fall, which continues apace. Hunters and gun owners, why aren't they voting? We have stuff on food, marriage. Someone wants to yell at me about playing the Joe Biden stuff. Should we be extreme if they are extreme? Why do I despise Obama more than Joe Biden? All that, so much more coming up tonight on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. I want to begin here. I just want to talk about last night really briefly, because I got this email. Dr. Jesse, are you the kind of doctor who can extract the crap you pounded into my ears last night? I can't imagine why you thought we might enjoy listening to that scumbag lying for an hour. Seriously, my ears will never be the same. Said his name is Eric. Obviously, he's half tongue-in-cheek, but he's referencing the fact that I carried Joe Biden's speech live. Well, speech. It really was a speech. It was supposed to be a press conference, but he just filibustered every question. And I carried it live as promised. Look, I'm not going to apologize, because if I had to do it over again, I would. But, you know, you ever had to go to a meeting at work you didn't want to go to? Hey, it's an all-hands-on-deck meeting. We used to have a safety meeting every morning when I was in construction. Every single morning, you had to have a safety meeting. You had to talk about a specific topic. Then you had to sign off on the safety meeting. And it was always something you knew. Hey, wear your hard hat. You know, it was always something that. But you always had to do a safety meeting. Now, is that the best part of my day? No, it sucked. It was horrible. It was boring. I hated it. Can we just go to work? But it's still necessary, right? The last thing in the world, you know, I would ever want to do to you is make you sit through Joe Biden for an hour when you're tuning into the radio, you're driving home, you're making dinner, you're working at what, however you happen to listen to the show. The last thing in the world I want to do is drag you down for an hour with that guy. It's not that I wanted to. I felt like it was necessary. That was a press conference Joe Biden gave to try to salvage his candidacy. That's what that press conference was all about. That's how they built it up. That's what it was. Did he do that? Did he do enough? I don't know. You know what my predictions have been. I say no. Many people say yes, but who really knows? It's just a theory on mine. I don't know. But that was potentially the last time you will ever hear Joe Biden answer questions from the press live. That was potentially the last time you will ever hear it. So I thought it was necessary to play it. I know it sucked. And it was boring. It's Joe Biden. It's freaking boring. It was an hour of this.
If your team came back and showed you data that she would fare better against former President Donald Trump, would you reconsider your decision to stay in the race?
No, unless they came back and said, there's no way you can win. Me. No one's saying that. No poll says that. Okay.
I know it was bad. I know. It is what it is, okay? I felt it was necessary. Oh, speaking of Biden, before we move on to other things, you know how we just hit this? I think we hit it in headlines last night, if I even got to it, but there was a story out about a Milwaukee radio station that edited a Joe Biden interview. They did one of these pre-recorded interviews. I've done them from time to time. I don't like doing them. I always prefer live radio, but sometimes scheduling is what it is. You got to pre-record one. But they pre-recorded an interview with Joe Biden. And then the story was they edited that pre-recorded interview with Joe Biden. They edited something out. We now know, courtesy of Peter Hassan, he's my friend, he's a reporter, that Biden's campaign got them to edit out something specific. Would you like to know what Joe Biden said that had the team scrambling to edit it out? Do keep in mind the Democrats are petrified about how much of the black vote they're using. And this is the direct quote from the President of the United States of America that they edited out of the interview. Quote, I have more blacks in my administration than any other president, all other presidents combined, and in major positions, cabinet positions. when you get to Joe's condition, when you get to where Joe is with his condition, what happens is, and you've seen this several times, especially in the past few years with Joe, what happens is, you lose that ability that you've developed over the years as a politician to massage your words on the fly to make sure what you really think doesn't come out. You know, that's what so much of politics is, Democrats and Republicans. You're trying to say something, but not really say what you want to say. But that little filter thing, Joe Biden doesn't have that little filter anymore. And now, look, Joe Biden has decades of being on camera calling black people things like predators, standing vocally against integrating neighborhoods and schools, actually referred to the integration of schools one time as a jungle. This is Joe Biden's career. It's not a stumble. This is how he really thinks. The average old Democrat is as racist as the Robert Byrd Joe Biden spoke so fondly of after the old KKK member died. That's just a fact. Now let's get to some Ask Dr. Jesse questions. Hey, Jesse, I listened to your show on my commute home. I appreciate your point of view. We don't agree on things. We don't agree most of the time, but I do feel like we can agree that our political system is devoid of reality on both sides. The guy goes on and says a bunch of things. I'm more of a libertarian, but he finishes up. He says, my question to you is, do you honestly feel like the way forward is following the pattern of calling the other side evil? If we continue to do this, it will only end with violence. Okay, so they call us evil, threat to democracy. I routinely call them evil, demonic, demons, things like that. Is that the way forward? Okay. It's a very fair question. It's a very fair question. If you're one of the people who maybe you're more in the middle, or maybe you're more of a gentle type, and there's nothing wrong with being that way. I should note that God made us all differently. I love to fight. I always have loved to fight. I enjoy it. That's just who I am. But a lot of people are more peace-loving. They would prefer things quiet down, calm down, and that's fine. We're all not supposed to be the same, okay? So maybe you are one of these people. Hey, let's tone it down. Hey, let's dial it down. Hey, I know they're saying terrible things about us. We can't say terrible things back to them. I understand that point of view. I will just say this. There is a time for everything. You know, I believe I read that somewhere. It's biblical. There's a time for everything. Have you ever actually read that verse that's in Ecclesiastes? Time for love. A time for hate. Did you know that was in the Bible? There's a time for hate. There's a time for peace. There's a time for war. We're all made differently, and we have to understand however we're made. No matter how we're made, times change. And times, phases of a society, of a nation, are almost always out of our control. Can you do little things in your area, your neighborhood, to help make things better? And if we all did things at once, if we all did things in our own area, could we change the whole thing? Yes, yes, of course. But the times we live in now, the times of our nation, the times of our planet are oftentimes, almost always, outside of our control. I can't control it. I may be able to do little things about it. You may be able to do little things about it, but we're not actually in control of it. So what am I talking about when it comes to how should we address the other side? Should we be just nicer? Doesn't this only end in violence? I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about this in a little more depth in just a moment. I first want to talk about those times. Remember, the people who run the West are attacking the food supply. You know, one of the reasons your food costs have gone up so drastically is the people who lead the United States of America want them to. Did you know that? Most of these people are on record. You have people like John Kerry getting more honest than the others, flat out blaming agriculture for the warming of the planet. Bill Gates, huge power broker in this country, has been quite open about his intention to eliminate cattle. Now, do you have an emergency food supply in order to prepare for whatever future these people may have in store for us? My Patriot Supply sells them. Millions of satisfied customers. This isn't a company that started yesterday. Millions. And they have four-week emergency food kits, $50 off now. Every kit is $50 off. Everyone who lives in your home needs an emergency food kit. Go to preparewithjessekelly.com. That's how you get $50 off. Preparewithjessekelly.com. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
I like it.
Returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, digging into all kinds of things tonight. And our question, in case you're just now joining us, is an interesting one. Someone wrote in a more center, gentle type. They're calling us evil. Why do we call them evil? Then it just spirals downhill. It ends in violence. Do we have to respond this way? Okay, so that was the gist of the question. Now, let me ask you, you ever heard of the rooftop Koreans? Rooftop Koreans, most people, it depends on how old you are, most people will at least have heard about them. Who were the rooftop Koreans? Okay, let's go back. This is Los Angeles, early 90s. Now, leading up to the Rodney King incident, there was all kinds of tension between the Korean community in LA and the black community in LA. These racial tensions themselves are nothing new. This is as old as time itself. So don't act like this is something special or unique to America or unique to black people or Koreans or unique to LA. Racial tensions are really, that's how the world works. In this scenario, this was the situation. The Koreans were mainly the business owners in the black neighborhoods in LA and in many other cities. You see Asian/black racial tensions all over the place today as well. It's not like the problem's gone away. But in LA at the time, the Koreans were the business owners. They owned the convenience stores, things like that. And in the black neighborhoods, the Koreans were the business store owners. Well, the black neighborhoods were full of crime, full of gangsters, full of dirtballs. This is where the Crips and the Bloods really started in L.A. when all that really, things got really, really criminal after, you know, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society blew up the black family. So things got really, really criminal in these black neighborhoods. And so these Korean store owners, the black people who were shoplifting, robbing, stick-ups, that it created an automatic tense situation. The black people, the law-abiding black people who'd go in, they were treated like crap by the Korean store owner who just got robbed by a black guy yesterday. And you know, that's how racial tensions usually go. It starts off of an incident. It starts off of this kind of truth. And then he's mad at him and he's mad at him and the blacks mad at the Koreans and the Koreans are mad at the black people. That's how it went, okay? So there was already all kinds of tension there. And then the Rodney King thing happened. Rodney King... You can go look at the video. I'm sure it's still online to this day. Rodney King gets pulled over, high on drugs, speeding. Video gets put out there. It looks terrible. Cops are just sitting there wailing on this dude with batons. It looks terrible. And I'm more speaking to younger people. Older people will remember this. But it caused a national storm immediately. And then the cops go on trial and acquitted. Acquitted of all charges. The black neighborhood in L.A., the black neighborhoods in L.A. erupt. And when I say erupt, don't think about a localized Antifa rally in Seattle. We're talking legions and legions of angry black people who feel like they have been done wrong, and they start rioting, looting, violence. There's amazing video of this still to this day. The LAPD didn't have the manpower to go put these things down. That's how many people were out there. So the LAPD had to make a choice. And they chose, look, it's kind of how it goes. There's a reason the roads are good in the rich neighborhoods and they're bad in the poor neighborhoods. The tax money tends to flow back towards the taxpayers. Places like Beverly Hills, a wall was built around them, essentially, with the LAPD. But where do the Koreans live? They don't live in Beverly Hills. As I just explained, they're in the black neighborhoods. Now you have a situation where your shop, your livelihood, your life itself is no longer being protected by the LAPD. And you have legions of very angry black people who feel like they've been wrong. And they hated you before the Rodney King verdict. Even though the Koreans didn't have anything to do with that, there were already violent incidents. A Korean shop owner had killed a young black woman. There was a powder keg ready to blow right there. That's what was going on in LA at the time. It was a powder keg ready to blow. And where do you think so many of the criminals went first to take out their anger? Directly down to the local shop owned by the Korean who just shouted at them yesterday and accused them of being criminals. And things were, it honestly, if you read the stories about it, it sounds like something you would read about in a movie, and it sounds terrifying. We're talking blacked out neighborhoods losing power. You're in the dark, you round the corner, and you're not faced with one bad dude. The street is full of bad dudes, and if they see you, you're gonna die. There's a video, I forget his name, of a trucker who got lost during this whole thing. He got himself turned around, he got lost. He accidentally drove his truck into one of these riots. He didn't hurt anybody or anything, but he stopped. They swarmed his truck, immediately yanked him out of there and tossed a brick at his head and bounced a brick off his head. He lived, if I remember right. Didn't he live, Chris? I forget about that. He didn't live? Chris, look that up and see if he lived. I don't want to give false history on the show, but it was bad. It was very, very bad. He might have died. Chris thinks he died. I forget. Hey, everyone's yelling at the radio. Who knows? I just forgot at the time. But that's what it was like. Now, why am I bringing up rooftop Koreans when we're talking about politics and everything else? I'll elaborate and I'll explain more in just a moment. Before we get to that, let's get to your dog and your dog's health. You know, we build certain truths into our minds that aren't facts. We as Americans, we think to ourselves, well, dogs live until 10, 12, and that's just when they're supposed to die. But why do dogs live longer in other parts of the world than they do here? That doesn't make sense. We're America. How could that be? Well, if I ate fruits, vegetables, beef, just all things that are good for the rest of my life, and you ate double cheeseburgers, fast food double cheeseburgers every day for the rest of your life, which one of us is more likely to live longer? Your dog's food is dead. It's empty calories. There's no nutrition in dog food, and we give that to them for the entirety of their lives, and we're stunned when they die at 10 years old. Pour Rough Greens on your dog's food. You don't have to change his food. Rough Greens is an all-natural nutritional supplement. Vitamins, minerals, probiotics, the works. Your dog will live longer. You will see physical differences in your dog. It fixed my dog's digestive issues. It fixed Fred. RoughGreens.com/Jesse gets you a free jumpstart trial bag. Or you can call 833-33-MY-DOG. We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
I like it.
Returns next.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
The word on the street then was, he's too country for pop. But then once I got to country, it was, he's too pop for country. So I kind of never really had a place to fit in, but that's exactly how and why I fit. I just embraced that. Like, yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Remember, you can email the show, and you should, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Back to what we're talking about. In case you're just now joining us, I got a question about de-escalating the tensions. If we keep calling each other evil, it's going to lead to civil war. And I'm talking now about the rooftop Koreans from the LA riots. So I gave you a little bit of the background. Now, the riots begin. The LAPD is not coming. No one's coming. These Korean shop owners, why are they now known as the rooftop Koreans? Well, they put out the call. We need help. We're under assault. We're under siege. Now, keep in mind, South Korea has mandatory military service. So many of these Koreans already knew their way around a weapon. Many of these people were immigrants, legal immigrants, I might point out, they knew their way around a weapon. And the Koreans, males, fighting age males, began showing up. And they began showing up, and they were staging themselves. You can go look at pictures of all this. They were staging themselves on top of the rooftops of their stores with weapons, defending themselves and their shops against the attacks in the neighborhood. So what's this have to do with your political tensions thing? Well, one day, you run a 7-Eleven. You're a Korean dude in LA. You're a husband, father, got a few kids. Life's normal. The next day, you find yourself on top of a rooftop with a rifle in your hands, aimed at an angry mob coming at you to kill you. Now, what changed? Did you change? Or did the circumstances around you change to such a point where you have to do things differently than you want to do them, differently than you've been doing them, in order to protect yourself, your life, and your family? You see, I understand every single person who wants things to calm down, ease up. I understand all that. But these people are dirty communists. These people are not going to stop until they've destroyed it all. Every single thing. Every statue torn down. Every border wall. Every bit of border security destroyed. Every single bit of the dollar destroyed. These marriage destroyed, the church destroyed, American culture destroyed, and many of these people have been caught saying these things on camera. They are fighting a revolution. You may not be, and you may not want them to be, and you may want to convince yourself that we can just, we'll just talk it out. These people are fighting a revolution. What you cannot do during a revolution is pretend like the revolution isn't happening because you want things to calm down. It doesn't work that way. I can't just sit there in my 7-Eleven ringing people up for lottery tickets and cigarettes just the way I was doing the day before, because now there's an angry mob with weapons coming to kill me. So because circumstances have changed, I must make changes. Times change, and there's a time for everything. And if you think we can nice our way out of where we are now with these people, you are sorely, sorely mistaken. There's not going to be a nice way out. There's not going to be a compromise way out. There's going to be victory, or everything we know and love will be gone. How far gone? Well, you hear this story out of Switzerland? Government just came in, took the child out of the home against the parents' will. The child's been gone for a year, hidden in a government care facility because the parents didn't believe the child was a tranny, and the child did. Swiss government, "We'll have your son now, please," came and took him out. Parents may never see him again. That's how serious these people take things. You are not dealing with normal circumstances or normal people. Chris, go ahead and play that Black Lives Matter thing. You remember who you're dealing with. They speak about it often.
We actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists.
We are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. The destruction you see around you is not an accident. It's on purpose. Now, what do you do? What do you do when the people who oppose you, including your federal government, have declared war on you and your society? Do you pretend like it's not happening? Or do you dig in, find your own clan, get on the rooftop, and fight back? Not literally. What do? You better dig in and adjust with the times. There is no more naive way of thinking I hear on the right than thinking if we just act normal, things will return to normal. And that is the predominant way of thinking in Washington, D.C. They still have convinced themselves of that. Remember Bill Barr getting up? Democrats used the Central Intelligence Agency and the Federal Bureau of Investigation to try to get Donald Trump to lose to Hillary Clinton, and then used a 2-year special investigation from Robert Mueller on the bogus claim that Trump was a Russian agent. And finally, we get a new attorney general in there, and he promptly stands up at the podium. Remember when he said this?
"Those who broke the laws will be held to account. But this cannot be, and it will not be, a tit-for-tat exercise."
Ridiculous. And a guarantee that we will lose. Well, they've run roughshod over the rule of law. They've destroyed every norm in the country. They've used government agencies, our government law enforcement agency, our spy agencies, and everything else under the sun to win elections, to silence and attack their political opponents. And now that we have power, we're not going to do that, guys, because that would be wrong. We can't violate those norms. That doesn't work. Even if you like the sound of it, it guarantees a loss. That's all that does. It guarantees a loss. You must resist the urge. Sitting Republican House members of the House and the Senate must resist the urge. If Trump happens to win again in November and gets back into the White House, he must resist the urge. What urge is that? To return to normal. Well, we just got to get back to normal, guys. We just got to get back to normal. We're not in normal times. The times have changed. That's not my fault. That's not your fault. That's reality. That's where we are. And that's what I think about that. Balding Eagle. I hate you guys. Ooh, man, this is a heavy one. I will keep this email as short as possible. My wife and I have been together for 7 years, married for 3. Before we got married, we agreed to wanting to have 2 kids. She became pregnant with 2 twin boys. Tragically, about halfway through the pregnancy, we lost one of our boys, and it absolutely killed my wife. We now have a beautiful 3-year-old son. I would love another child, but my wife is reluctant and says she does not want another child because she's afraid something terrible happening over and over again. Am I a terrible person for having thoughts of ending my marriage in pursuit of potentially having another child? As desperately as I want another child, I feel that this is a blatant betrayal of my vows before God to stick with her no matter what. What are your thoughts? Well, that is a doozy, isn't it? Let's talk about that. Bet you didn't think you were going to get that on a Friday. Next.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. And Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Don't forget, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. All right. I'm not going to read the whole email again. I'll just go back. We got a heavy one for before we get to Obama. I'm going to talk about Obama here in a minute. Let's get to this. The guy writes an email and he says, hey, my wife was pregnant with twins. She lost one. Just devastated her. They had one. They have a healthy boy. She now says she doesn't want any more kids. She's worried about something bad will happen. And the guy said, am I a terrible person for having thoughts of ending my marriage in pursuit of having another child? No, I would never call anyone a terrible person because I'm a terrible person. I can't judge anyone ever. Doesn't make you a terrible person. Makes you a human being. But here's what's going on, buddy. We all are guilty of this, myself included. We have these visions, and in fact, this is probably going to resonate with a lot of people. It probably resonate with you in some way. We all of us, whether you're young, middle-aged, old, we have this vision of how we want our life to go and how we think our life is going to go. Don't you, at least on a big picture level, I'm not even talking about what you're going to do for a living, although maybe that's part of it for you, but you have this image. For a lot of people, that image would be, okay, I'm going to go to school, and then after that, I'll probably go to college. That's what I'll do. You're supposed to go to college, right? So I'll go to college, and I'll go there for 4 years, and I'll graduate, and when I get out, I'll get a good job. But while I'm in college, I hope I meet my wife or my husband of the future, and then we'll get married because we want to get married then, and then we'll make kids. How many kids do you want? How many kids do you want? Oh, I want 3. Oh, you want 3. Oh, great. And then, oh, we'll work really hard, and we'll save some money eventually. We'll buy a home. But you see what I mean? And one day, hopefully, if we've done okay financially, maybe we'll be able to afford a boat. I've always wanted a boat. And then we'll retire in Galveston, Texas, and whatever your thing is. We have this vision of how our life is going to turn out, of how we want our life to turn out. And life, God, has a way of saying, no, that's not my plan for you. That's your plan. That's not my plan for you. I want you to go somewhere else. Look, if you told me 10 years ago that I was going to be doing media for a living, I'd never done media in my life. I would have laughed in your face, told you you were an idiot. No way, not in a million years. Life throws you curveballs. If you told me at one point in time I was going to be out of work, flat broke, desperate, and on Craigslist looking for a job so I can afford to feed my wife and sons, if you told me that when I was 20, I would have told you you were nuts. And yet that's where I was at one point in time. What you're going through is you had this outline of your life, and your wife had one too, right? We're going to have two kids, and that's our goal, and we're going to have a bunch of kids. And then this terrible thing happened. You lost a baby. And believe me, I know, I've told you all before, we lost our second. You know, we had our son James, and then we wanted our kids really close together in age. And so we tried to have another one, and we lost them. And it still hurts, right? And then after we had our second one, Luke, he was healthy, and that's when we decided we're done. It was so painful to lose one. We made one of the few decisions that I regret in life. I take that back. I regret a lot of the things I've done. But if I had to do it over again, we would have had more. I just love being a dad. You know, I love having kids. So I know what you're going through. I've been there myself. I know how bad it hurts. But you don't leave your wife over it. Your wife is you now. You are her. And you don't know, just because she's going through this now, and you're going through this too, you don't know that that's going to be the same in a year, in 2 years. You don't know. What you don't do is throw the baby out with the bathwater, run out on your wife, run out on your kid, and then go shopping out there for what you think might be something better, because you're probably not going to find something better. You have any idea how many single men and women email this show asking us to start a dating service and crap like that? Because they can't, of every age, I should note, because they can't find anybody. How hard it is to find someone who shares your values. You've got a wife who loves you, apparently. Loves your kid. Going through it right now, understandably, emotionally. Just stick around. Doesn't make you a terrible person, but... yeah, don't be running out on your wife. Hey, Jesse, I can't find the specific email I was actually looking for. I thought it here on top. I thought I left it on top, but apparently I didn't. You often say, essentially what she said was, you often say you hate Obama more than you like Biden, or more than you hate Biden. Why? What's the deal? All right, I need to explain why I despise Barack Obama so much. So we've had many, 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 many different presidents of different kinds in the history of this country, and politics has changed so much. You know, we've had many Republicans, we've had many Democrats, we've had many different kinds. And I know I'd call Democrats communists all the time now, because that's what they are. But Barack Obama was unique. He was unique in this way. Barack Obama not only hated America, hates America, because that's how he was raised. Barack Obama is capable. He's sharp enough. He's shrewd enough. He's charming enough to hurt America in significant ways. And he has. He combines two things that are a deadly combination if you love the United States of America. For in presidential history, we've had so many good presidents. We've had so many bad presidents. We've had good Republicans, bad Republicans. We've had good Democrats, bad Democrats. Not all of them loved the country either. A lot of them loved power. They just kind of loved power. Not all of them loved the country. But you have a hard time. I have a hard time, at least from what I read in presidential history, I have a hard time ever finding one who hated it. Really, at his core, had a real hatred of America. And that brings us to Barack Obama. And I'll talk about this in a little bit more depth in a moment, about his background, the damage he did, the damage he's still doing. Why? How could I hate Obama more than I hate Biden? Biden brought in more illegals. I'll explain in a moment. Before I do that, I need you to sign a pledge for me. I take that back. I'm asking for you to sign a pledge for me. IFCJ, the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. I've told you before what they do. We're talking, they're building bomb shelters over there. Fire devices, whatever they need to put out fires, because there are places they don't have fire service. There are Holocaust survivors who don't have a place to live. They're digging into that. People need food. They're digging into that. They are over there doing the best they can to help a country that's fighting a two-front war right now. And all they're asking for is to sign the pledge. Go to supportifcj.org, if you will, and sign the pledge. The pledge, it's a show of solidarity, a show of solidarity that's going to be presented physically to Benjamin Netanyahu. Hey, just letting you know, not every American hates your friggin' guts. Supportifcj.org is where you go to sign the pledge. So go sign it. It may seem small, and it is easy for you, but it's meaningful for them. All right? We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency. It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.